Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Last year we passed a bill, slightly different circumstances, different president, a lot of the same issues though, in a bill that was bipartisan. It was celebrated with House passage, and it wasn't 100% as supported on either side, but largely the bill that we passed last year relating to family and business taxes has been included in the bill this year.
Nebraska Representative Adrian Smith at a recent Ways and Means Committee field hearing.
We can celebrate some of the tax benefits in the bill. I hope we can do that. And sticking to the facts at hand. And Mr. Kim, I appreciate your comments that those who might disagree are not the enemy. Absolutely not. And that's why I think this bill actually strengthens the safety net to make sure that the folks who need the help will receive the help.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The U.S. Grains Council officially adopting a new name, now known as the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council, following a membership vote during their 65th annual Board of Delegates meeting held Friday in Grand Rapids, Michigan. President and CEO Ryan LeGrand says the change reflects the organization's evolving role as a global advocate, not only for U.S. grains like corn, sorghum, and barley, but also for co-products like ethanol and distillers' dried grains with solubles, or DDGs. LeGrand says the updated name better positions the council to access new markets in the energy sector and capitalize on growing international demand for renewable fuels and feed co-products. Founded in 1960 as the U.S. Feed Grains Council, organization last changed its name in 1998. New branding retains legacy recognition while opening doors to additional bio-based markets. Two major rail carriers, Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern, have announced plans to merge, forming what would be the first U.S. transcontinental railroad spanning 50,000 route miles across 43 states. The deal announced last week still requires approval from the Surface Transportation Board, which has posted a dedicated merger resource page and expects a final ruling by 2027. Now, under the rules, rail mergers must enhance competition and serve the public interest. Ag stakeholders watching closely as the new network could streamline coast-to-coast shipments or, conversely, reduce routing options and drive up rates for grain, feed, and fertilizer transport. Again, the Surface Transportation Board expected to scrutinize both competitive impacts and downstream effects. Average U.S. farm real estate value climbed to $4,350 per acre, marking a 4.3% increase over last year. That's according to USDA's latest land values report. The figure reflects the combined value of land and buildings on ag property. Cropland averaging $5,830 per acre nationwide, up 4.7% from 1 year ago. Pasture land up 4.9% to an average of $1,920 per acre. Now, Utah led all states in cropland value growth with a 9.7% increase, followed by Michigan at 8.2% and Minnesota at 7%. Most expensive farmland in the nation, though, remains in Rhode Island, averaging $22,500 per acre. New Jersey and Massachusetts follow. And on the opposite end, New Mexico holds the lowest average at $725 per acre. Wyoming and Nevada close behind at $1,000 and $1,200 per acre, respectively. Pasture value growth highest in North Dakota, Kansas, and Nebraska, reflecting continued demand in the plains. I'm Tony St. James. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We are the policy arm that represents the 60,000 U.S. pork producers.
Maria Ziba is Vice President of Government Affairs with the National Pork Producers Council, NPPC.
For trade and overall this year, it's been a little bit down, I would say. For our industry, trade is vitally important. We export over 25% of our production, and that's really concentrated in the areas where we have the countries where we have free trade agreements with and those comprehensive trade agreements that we negotiated a few decades ago. And with that, that's created a lot of opportunities for our industry to export a lot of products, products that we don't consume as much in the United States, but overall growing the value that our producers receive for that market hog. Ultimately, last year we exported over $8 billion of pork and pork exports to over 100 countries. The vast majority of that went to those 20 countries that we have a free trade agreement with. This year, we are slightly down in our export. We are through first part of this year, our exports were $3.5 billion, and that's compared to 3.7. So about a 4.5% decrease in exports here January through May. And we expect to have the new data come out shortly. With that, some of the top markets that we are continuing to do very well in are Mexico, for example, and Colombia. Those are our shining stars, as well as some market access into Australia and Central America. The Asian markets are the ones that we're hurting some bit in, and Canada. And Canada does have that reciprocal tariff on our products, on processed products. And so that has definitely hurt a bit of our exports into that market.
When it comes to trade, China has been important, but then there's Mexico.
The relationship with Mexico is vitally important to our industry, and it's not just because of the exports that we the pork products that we send to Mexico, we sell to Mexico, but mainly because of also the foreign animal disease issues and making sure that we prevent diseases from coming into the country from Mexico, or in some cases flies. For example, screwworm has been at the top of the list here, and has caused market disruptions in the cattle industry, for example. But for us, Mexico has been a real shining star. Last year, we exported $2.7 billion of pork and pork products. This year, the first 5 months of this year, we're at a billion. So it's certainly an important market for us for our exports. But I'd say that it's equally, if not more important, to be collaborative on the foreign animal disease issues, just because we certainly don't want to see an incursion of whatever disease or pests are out there coming through that Mexican border. And we've been doing a lot to engage with the Mexican pork producers on this issue.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Mr. Vaden, I'm going to follow up on the questions that my friend just asked regarding ARS facilities. We have two of them in Minnesota, as you no doubt know. One of them is in St. Paul, conducts research on intracereal disease, plant science, and soil and water management. And, of course, you probably also know that earlier this year that those lab researchers in St. Paul were laid off and then rehired.
Minnesota Senator Tina Smith questioning Stephen Vaden on USDA's reorganization plan.
There's also a lab in Morris, Minnesota that focuses on soil and water conservation. That lab has 15 full-time vacancies right now due to the current Trump administration's force reductions and lack of hiring. So my first question is, what is the administration's plans for these two ARS facilities in Minnesota? What's your plan for keeping them going, staffing, and letting them do their work.
I appreciate the question, Senator. With regard to the staffing levels at those individual facilities in Minnesota, I'll have to get back with you on that. But with regard to the labs themselves, as I noted in the beginning, as a result of the Secretary's plan and the President's budget, which is currently pending before the Congress, 90 of 94 ARS labs will be untouched. The labs that you have mentioned in the state of Minnesota are among the 90 of 94 ARS labs that will remain untouched by this reorganization.
I'm a little concerned about what is in this reorganization plan or what isn't in this reorganization plan regarding what the administration's plans are for rural development. So can you tell me, does the administration commit to maintaining rural development as a USDA mission area rather than having it get farmed out to other agencies across the federal government? And what is your plan for keeping rural development state offices?
Senator, rural development is very personal to me. As you and I know, when I came before you for my confirmation hearing, I live in rural America. That's where I go home to. I have seen, as you have seen in the state of Minnesota over the past many decades, where towns that used to have multiple factories, including my own, have lost those in recent years. You have a committed champion in rural development at USDA and Secretary Rollins and myself. When it comes to our state-level offices for our rural development, the county offices I believe you referred to, there is a reason why they're not mentioned in the memorandum. That is because they are unaffected by this memorandum.
Do you expect those regional offices, those local offices, to stay as they are right now?
Senator, we are going to leave the county-level footprint alone as a result of this memorandum, and that not only goes for rural development, I want to be clear, it also goes for the Farm Services Agency.
Just yesterday, the Banking Committee, where I served, passed unanimously out of committee a significant piece of housing legislation. And included in that legislation is a bill that Senator Rounds and I from South Dakota have worked on to make important improvements and reforms to the rural housing service so that we can preserve rural housing in communities. This is over 400,000 units of rural housing across the country. I constantly hear about the challenges of staffing shortages and technology challenges in rural housing service, which makes it very difficult for the agency to actually function and operate effectively, and our bill addresses this. So I want to just mention this to you because as the Secretary and the agency moves forward, we've made an important first step with passing this legislation out of banking housing. Now I hope that we can move it through the Senate floor and through the House and get the President's signature. As I said, it's 100 unanimous passage out of Banking Housing Committee. I hope that we can continue to work on that.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Make Our Children Healthy Again strategy will be released by the MAHA Commission on August 12th. Brian Glenn, Director of Government Affairs for the American Farm Bureau Federation, said his organization submitted its policy recommendations centering around improving farmers' ability to meet the needs of a healthy America.
To keep affordable, nutritious food on Americans' tables, farmers need the tools to protect crops and promote sustainability. So our recommendations really focus on four big buckets, including advancing American innovation, smart regulatory reform measures to support farmers and ranchers, public investments in agricultural research, and support for access to effective pesticide tools.
He said America's farmers and the MAHA Commission share the same goal of a healthy America, and that's why farmers need to engage on the issue.
Farmers and ranchers rely on technology and innovative tools to provide a safe, abundant, and affordable food supply. It is important that the Commission listen to farmers and ranchers to ensure the Commission's recommendations and the strategies they come out with are grounded in science and informed by farmer and rancher experiences.
The Farm Bureau recommendations can directly and positively improve the American farmer's ability to meet the needs of a healthy America.
Access to safe and effective tools and technologies, regulatory reform policy to better support farmers and ranchers in delivering nutritious food, and investment in agricultural research to fuel innovation is vital to supporting the important work of farmers and ranchers on delivering safe and nutritious food every day.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Well, USDA's latest grain crushings and co-products production report shows corn use for alcohol and other products totaling 498 million bushels in June. That's up slightly from May, but still a bit below the June 2024 levels. Most of the corn, 92.1%, went toward alcohol production, with 448 million bushels specifically used for fuel alcohol. That number is up 1% from May, but unchanged from a year ago. Corn used for beverage alcohol fell to 3.06 million bushels. That's a 20% drop from the previous month, 24% year-over-year decline. Dry mill, wet mill production remained steady, with dry mill accounting for 92% of fuel alcohol use. USDA's latest honeybee colonies report out showing mixed trends in colony health and management for operations with five or more hives. As of the first of the year, U.S. had 2.63 million colonies, down 1% from the previous year. But by April, that number rose to 2.99 million. Colony losses remained steady, 10% lost in both the first and second quarters of this year. Highest loss rate in 2024 was the fourth quarter, when 14% of colonies were lost. Additions, though, outpacing losses early this year, with over 592,000 colonies added in Q1 and 641,000 added in Q2. Now, renovations such as requeening or adding nucleus colonies spiked in the second quarter, reaching 16% of operations. That's the highest quarterly renovation rate recorded over the past 2 years. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
So far, you know, definitely down in the south and all the way up towards Kansas, we're pretty much done with harvest. And then, of course, as you move further north, we'll have growers starting to prep for their winter wheat plantings and spring wheat entries into our wheat yield contest have gone up significantly.
Talking about this year's wheat harvest, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers, Chandler Gould.
The drought and drier areas that are starting to come in the last week or two so far, I don't think are having a major impact on wheat. I know it is definitely affecting the corn crop in some parts of the U.S., but overall, I think we're going to have a very good production year, assuming something doesn't major happen between now and basically the end of August or first of October when our states are finishing up. So
he also admits the wheat industry has a celebration this year.
This is the 75th year of NOG being in existence and representing the U.S. wheat growers from the 20 largest wheat producing states. And we had a great kickoff at our annual meeting in January and then had a big press conference with all of our current living presidents at Commodity Classic. And then we'll be continuing that celebration at our fall board meeting in November in Austin, Texas. And so 75 years of advocacy, 75 years of doing what we can to make sure wheat growers can be remain profitable, and 75 years of things that we've learned from so that we can continue to move forward for another 75 years representing the U.S. wheat growers and the needs they have as we continue to work through, you know, complicated issues that continue to head their direction, whether that be through policy or regulations.
And this week, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. promoting MAHA, Make America Healthy Again.
The most important thing about MAHA, Tony, that we need to all agree upon is, could our food system be better? Well, absolutely. And could our agriculture production systems be better? Yes, on that as well. There's always room for improvement. And so I just want to be very clear that the wheat growers don't think that we're doing everything perfect. But our concerns are some of the what I would literally call allegations and then also recommendations from the first MAHA report as we prepare for this second one to come out here in the month of August simply were not based on sound science. And so if you're going to make recommendations to the changes to our food systems or our agricultural production systems, it needs to be backed with peer-reviewed sound science. And if it is, I can guarantee you growers will look at it and will figure out how to adopt it. But when it's more on theories of individuals that have no science behind it. Not only is it impractical, but probably even impossible for the wheat grower to do. We're simply asking, when you are putting these things into a government document that is being critical of our food system and our agricultural production system, and you have to think about the audience is probably now eight generations removed from their food supply. You're putting basically false information out there that is scaring the consumer in regards to the safety of our production systems. And we know we have one of the most safe agriculture food production systems in the world that is still at the lowest cost to its consumers. So we're really banging on one point. Please make sure your recommendations or criticisms are based on sound science, and that will solve a lot of the concern and uncertainty that we're seeing in the agriculture industry in regards to the Make America Healthy Again reports that continue to come out of the Trump administration.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
First of all, I want to know if you'll help me support these bills. I just put two new bills, ag bills, on the floor today.
Richard Fordyce being considered for Undersecretary of Ag for Farm Production and Conservation at a recent Senate Ag Committee hearing with Senator Tommy Tuberville from Alabama.
The first address is the Federal Crop Insurance Board of Directors. There are four seats for producers, and we want one of those seats to be for a producer of both livestock and crops to provide a different perspective for various new livestock crops insurance products RMA is implementing. That's my first one. That sound pretty good?
Yes, Senator, it actually does. It sounds like it makes some sense and would.
And now we're from Alabama. Now we can make some sense now. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
I think I've answered that.
But would you vote for that?
Would I vote for that?
Yeah.
So I think, I'm not backpedaling, Senator, but I think what I would need to do is understand exactly what the makeup is of the Federal Crop Insurance Board. But it sounds like a good idea to me.
Thank you. Thank you. The second bill would authorize a study for double and rotational cropping of winter canola in the Mid-South region. This would gather data as farmers in North Alabama and Tennessee are starting to grow winter canola for synthetic aviation fuel and diesel fuel. All these bills get complex, I know.
I'm sure that is complex, but I am aware of the winter canola effort. And I would say that I would applaud the RMA for being responsive. And having the ability to evolve as things change. So I would think that they would take a look at what kind of options might be available.
Thank you. And as we all know, our farmers are in bad trouble. I have a lot of friends that are huge farmers, and they don't know whether they're going to make it through the year, much less through this crop. Right now, farmers are the largest group with the most suicides in the country right now. It's that bad. It is really, really serious. So access to credit is becoming harder and harder. This year was really tough. We had to come up with some subsidy for some of the farmers to get them through this past winter to get another crop. Poultry producers are facing huge challenges. Steep cost of poultry houses, $3.5 million for four houses. Can you discuss the importance of increasing our guaranteed loan limits to $3.5 million because of that?
I was serving as the administrator of the Farm Service Agency the last time the loan limits were raised, and I think it was welcomed certainly by the agency, and it was welcomed by the producers that the farm loan program serve. And if that were the intent of Congress to raise those loan limits, I think that would be appropriate given the cost of things and the entry level costs of things.
It's going sky high. It's not getting any cheaper. One quick question. Feral swine. We got huge problems in our state, and I know other states. And the big, beautiful bill, we had $105 million for the feral swine eradication program. What's your stance on the eradication program? You think we're making progress?
That would be tough for me to say. We do have those in Missouri as well.
Y'all don't have hogs?
We have feral swine. Yeah, we have wild hogs in Missouri.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
USDA's annual look at farmland values and cash rents, according to Chief Economist Seth Meyer, indicates a cooling in year-over-year growth. But that trend, more reflective in
cash rents showing flat value changes year-over-year, but we're seeing the farmers' assessed value of their agricultural real estate increasing by 4.3%.
Breaking down land values by croplands and pastures.
If we separate it out into cropland, still producers assess that cropland increased 4.7% in 2024. To $5,830 an acre. So assessing that cropland is increasing at a greater rate than overall ag land, and pasture land showing an even larger increase at 4.9%, hitting $1,920.
Farm real estate value by state reflected year-over-year increases in all 48 states in the contiguous U.S., led by an 8.4% farmland value increase in North Carolina. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.